Today, doing it a Royal Commission in New Zealand. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian and New Zealand flavour. And today I'm joined again by property expert Joe Wilkes. Hi, Joe.
Morning, Martin.
So it's cold over there, cold over here.
Yeah, a bit fresh. Scraped the ice off the car for the wife this morning. She went off to work. It's getting a bit wintry, but all good.
And a few things going on with regards to the economy and the banking sector. And as you can say, it's pretty cold in that sector too.
Yeah, well, we're getting all sorts of bits and pieces that are coming out of the woodwork now. And, it's starting to make me ask the question that maybe we do need a Royal Commission into our banking sector. We've had a rate cut a couple of months ago. Rates were cut, official cash rate. Immediately, within about 3 or 4 weeks, the banks were asking for another rate cut. And yet GDP figures released yesterday weren't that bad, 0.6% growth for the quarter, which, you know, is reasonable. And then you look at it and you think, well, a lot of that growth is actually coming out of the construction sector and a construction boom that we're seeing across the country. But, you know, a lot of it's happening in places like Auckland, Tauranga, Hamilton. So we've got figures that are on the surface okay. And then you look at the per capita GDP figures for the quarter, 0.1% less impressive. And immigration still, immigration's gone back on the rise. So a lot of our GDP is just increasing bodies and numbers of transactions. But I think for me, there's a bit of murky stuff going on in our banking sector. And this week we've had the departure of the ANZ CEO in New Zealand, David Hisco. He was at the helm at ANZ for 9 years, having come over from Australia. And it seems daft, really. He's been let go or has decided to go of mutual agreement on the back of a few question marks over a bit of being driven around by a chauffeur and storing a bit of wine over in Australia, believe it or not.
Well, that seems a weird reason to be chucked out.
It's, absolutely bonkers. I would have thought, as a CEO, part of your role is public face, and you would sort of expect that the time wasted driving your own car is time that you're not being productive. And if you are out there, you know, going to events and everything else, it is probably on an official capacity. So I didn't really see a major issue with that. Mm-hmm. The wine storage, apparently he was told by his Australian overlords many years ago that it was okay. And that might have been one of the tempting carrots to get him to move from Australia to New Zealand in the first place. I don't want to move this. Can you store it for me? So those sort of things are quite small. I think that the reality is that we've got far, far bigger issues that they stem from the Reserve Bank's inquiry into capital ratios and the core one capital requirements. And there's a lot of lobbying going on. Even I thought it was quite bizarre, but 2 or 3 days after the departure of Mr. Hisco at 9 o'clock on Monday morning, Simon Bridges, the National Party spokesman's jumping on the bandwagon, saying that Grant Robertson, the current Labour Finance Minister, needs to get involved in the Reserve Bank's independent review of the capital adequacy requirements. Grant Robertson rightly has said, no, this is something for the independence of the RBNZ to investigate. But the whole thing just smells bad. I suppose off the back of the work that we've done with DFA, have had conversations now which do go to the RBNZ. I've spoken to representatives of the RBNZ and people who are involved in the financial stability side of the economy. And I highlighted to them the loans issue that we talked about in our wanted first-time buyers post, and just how the loans being reported by the banks to them weren't correlating with the transaction numbers that first-time buyers could have been responsible for. Mm-hmm. April's data, March's data, February and January all suggests that first-time buyers have been responsible for, if you count the loans against the REI and Z numbers, for between 35% and 40% of the transactions taking place. CoreLogic, who the Reserve Bank rely on for data on this, are suggesting much lower levels of transactions between 20 and 23%. So we have got a loan issue reporting challenge. And I think that as a result, we don't really understand the risks that have been building up in the system and what's going on. It's time to get granular and to set a commission to go and investigate what exactly has been going on in this.
So it's interesting, the GDP number, of course, in Australia, the GDP number's dropping. And if you look at it carefully, we're in a per capita recession, which means that effectively the only GDP is being created by population growth, plus the fact that the business investment's down a lot. And really, it's the government sector and its resources that are effectively just supporting the economy at the moment. So it's not really looking flash. But what about over in New Zealand? What's happening there?
Yeah, well, the retail side of things is slowing down. Service sector generally has slowed down over the last quarter. The numbers came in, I think, better than the RBNZ expected. So 0.6% for the quarter was actually a better return than they were anticipating when they forecast a month or two ago. And it's interesting that, you know, they've cut the cash rate when actually the numbers on the GDP aren't that bad. There'll be, you know, 2.4% annual growth. So that's unusual. All the growth, however, seems to be in the construction sector. And this is where I feel for them, really. These builders, and God bless them, they get up in the morning, they stand outside and they put things up all day and they work bloody hard. And they're, you know, they go out, they take risks, they borrow money, they go and build products because they're, I suppose, encouraged to. And the REINZ numbers, everything that you read in the local, in the newspapers around the country, isn't talking about how severe the drop-off in transactions has been this year. So there's going to be a lot of these guys. They're willy-nilly building into this change in real estate sentiment. And a lot of them, I think, are going to get caught. And I'm hoping that they're well provisioned enough to be able to lower prices and get transactions flowing again. But GDP is essentially construction at the moment. And we have got the rising immigration numbers that came down at end of last year, beginning of this year. They're now back up on the rise. And the finance minister is pretty much saying, well, you know, it's not something that we can see reducing. They don't want to reduce it. It's a reality because the economy survives on this churn of extra people to transact a little bit more. So it's a really interesting time at the moment. But the things for me are that, you know, what's not being disclosed and what we're in the press and so what we are in the country and not really hearing about the banking side of it.
Mm. Yeah, well, of course, the capital changes that the Reserve Bank in New Zealand are talking about are significantly higher than anything that is being discussed here in Australia. But I'm interested that pretty much all of the banks who've got, you know, extensions into New Zealand here are complaining about it, saying, you know, it's much higher, et cetera, et cetera, and we're fine and we're well capitalized, there's no issues. And yet it seems to me that Adrian Orr's probably got his finger on the pulse with regards to the risks in the system and trying to deal with it. But of course, the banks hate it because as the capital lifts, they have to it takes a haircut on their profits and makes it harder to manage the business. Very, very fascinating dichotomy between the behaviours of the Reserve Bank there and here in Australia, where frankly, now they've just declared underemployment's an important issue a decade late, right? So there was a speech that Philip Lowe gave yesterday. Because up till now, they've been basically saying, well, you know, we're going to get the employment rate down to about 5%. And once we get down to 5%, you know, magically incomes will start rising and everything will be wonderful. And now he's changed the target and said, no, it needs to be lower because of underemployment. So you wonder whether they've got the finger on the pulse at all. And yet the critical issues, which is take rates lower, do quantitative easing, you know, simulate the economy, encourage the banks to lend more. I mean, that's the suite of policies that are happening here. Looks as though it's rather similar there. And of course, it's all trying to stoke the housing sector and get that going because effectively that's the quote growth engine unquote that they want to unleash. But of course, the risks in the system, both in New Zealand and Australia, because of the massively high home prices, the lack of demand, and the fact that households are so leveraged, put that all together, and you're just building ever more risk in the system. So to me, it just seems a bit nutty.
Yeah, the whole bail-in side of things that is clear over here is a concern. Yeah. Now we've had recently the RBNZ talking about extra measures that they can impart, lowering interest rates, and they have talked about the purchase of bonds in the market and mortgage-backed securities. So they're aware of what they can do. That will kill the New Zealand dollar. But it is something that they are is on their list of things that they're considering. Now, I had a conversation with somebody at the Reserve Bank of New Zealand a couple of weeks ago, and I won't quote the name, but the reality of bail-in is that and talking about the parental subsidiaries over in Australia, is that if one of your Australian parents does get into trouble, the excess capital beyond the minimum requirements in New Zealand could be drawn over to Australia to help them out. Mm. This week, Westpac have issued an environmental bond for $800 million, which seems like a really strange time to be issuing a capital raising. I mean, albeit it's under the guise of a green theme, but. I suppose that's an easy way to sell it to retail investors as a green option. Mm. So there are things that are building. Westpac, they came out with an absolutely ridiculous forecast of, I think, a rise in home prices over the next 4 years of 18%, which the numbers...
18? Did you say 18%?
18% over the next 4 years. Okay. And I just can't see that. I mean, some of the data that we're getting now, the top end of the market in Auckland... this year, first 5 months of the year, sales volumes beyond 2 million are 43% down on the corresponding period of last year. The volume of sales between 1.2 million and 2 million is 28% down. Volume of sales between 900,000 and 1.2 million is 15% down. So there's a big change in how many things are actually transacting, and this has this flow on effect of reducing money flowing around the rest of the economy. Now, what was interesting in the conversation that I had with this representative of the Reserve Bank was that they hadn't considered this loan mismatch, and I've highlighted it, and through our posts, I've also had a couple of reporters now coming to me saying, well, what are you talking about? So, I'm just talking about the balance. If you've got all of these loans, they can't match up with this number of transactions. Mm. So, somewhere deep in the system, there hasn't been enough looking at actually what's happening, and I think that we've got a concentration of risk on quite a few households. I mean, there was data a couple of years ago saying that 40% of the mortgage debt in the country was held by 8% of the households.
Right.
Yeah. So we have got this concentration, and the only way that can happen is if the LVRs, the loans were reported against the value of the property, almost ignoring what the equity position might have been.
Yeah.
Now, a good friend of ours, Mike Kirk's done quite a lot of work on breaking down the price ranges, particularly sales in Auckland, which is his marketplace. And I asked him to go back to 2006 and look at the weight of transactions or the number of sales that are taking place in each price band, 0 to 300,000, 300 to 500,000, 500 to 700,000, 7 to 9. And then we've just widened the bands a bit. So we've got 900 to 1.2 million, 1.2 million to 2, and then over 2 million. You can see also on the total volume of transactions back in 2006-07, volumes of transactions peaked in Auckland at 33,785 in 2006. They dropped off a little bit to 31,051 in 2007, and then pretty much halved. As you went into 2008, so volume of transactions 2008, 16,816. So a massive decrease in the amount of money that would have been flowing around the system. The low point in terms of transactions was 2008, but it continued to stay quite low into 2010. And then you see this gradual pickup. What's really interesting to me is that when you look at 2012-13 data, going back to 2012, there were 2,913 Auckland transactions that were below 300,000, and 10,155 transactions in the band between 300,000 to 500,000. You look at that in 2018, there were 76 transactions below 300,000, 773 in the 300,000 to 500,000 bracket. So you've got about, well, it's 10% of the transactions taking place at the lower end of the market. Now, part of that's because prices have been going up. But what's been going up with that will have been the debt levels and the exposure that people will be having in these next brackets up. The flow of money into the very top end of the market, back in 2012, there were 1,760 transactions in the 900 to 1.2 market, 1,277 in the 1.2 to 2 million market, and 426 in the market over 2 million. Fast forward 6 years, and the volume of transactions has tripled in the 900 to 1.2 market, so 5,054 transactions. The 1.2 to 2 million market has also tripled, and you've gone to 4,357 transactions. 2 million market plus has almost quadrupled to 1,457. Now, going back to how much of this decline in volumes has happened the first 5 months of this year, that's why the banks are all running around saying we need to keep cutting the cash rate. The GDP figures, because the poor builders don't know what's really going on and they're not being told about how bad the transaction numbers are. They're just being told, oh, prices are holding up and they're 2% down year on year, not the end of the world. When you actually go granular on data, and I've had some conversations with a couple of real estate information providers now, one of whom in particular, very helpful, homes.co.nz, they are able to show me now sales that are 15, 16, 17% down on purchase prices that were made in 2016-17. There's one chap in data that I saw a couple of days ago who bought his house in October of 2018, so not that long ago, and he's just sold it for 15% less. So there are things happening there that the builders aren't aware of because they're not getting it from the mainstream press. And I'm not saying that people need to stop building. You need to keep working and business need to keep going. But if you're not being given data and real information by the press, you run the risk of running your business into challenge when this will come out of the wash. Second half of this year, if transaction volumes don't pick up, we're going to have a challenge. The only way that transaction volumes can pick up, though, I think, is if we continue with the loan fraud that must be happening. And I saw a really interesting interview that Robbie Barwick did with Philip Seuss recently. And he's just saying, you know, in Australia, the only way that the market can carry on the way it was is if this mortgage loan reporting fraud continues. It's because of that I think we need a Royal Commission in New Zealand.
Well, it's very interesting because the dynamics are somewhat similar here, right? We had that very significant tightening of lending standards, you know, Royal Commission and the fact the regulators bore down on the banks. But recently we've seen that all basically being reversed. And we now know, we've seen evidence of banks, you know, opening the lending taps and basically knocking loans approved now that they wouldn't have approved, you know, even 4, 5, 6 months ago. So it seems to me that the regulators are encouraging the banks to lend more. The banks are therefore, you know, saying, well, okay, yes, well, you know, we're happy to do that. But they're actually going back to their old bad ways, which means that people can get loans they should never have got. Now, what's interesting, the data just came out here for up till March, and the number of loans as a proportion of all loans that are new, that are written, outside standard serviceability
on the rise,
is up, right? You know, go back a few years, it was quite low, it's up high. So we know that they're actually breaking their own rules, firstly. Secondly, those rules are loosening, right? And thirdly, the other issue, which is exactly the one you're touching on, there's a difference between the individual value of individual loans and their loan-to-value ratios, which is what is being reported by APRA here, and the true loan-to-value ratios, because quite often people have multiple loans against the one property. So in other words, that the true equity of the property is not represented by the loan-to-value ratio of the individual loan that's being written. Right. And that is the big lie. And that is the big lie that everybody's missing. In fact, APRA responded to a request quite recently to discuss this. And they basically said, well, we only look at individual loan information. We don't look at anything at all from a customer perspective. Right. Now, of course, the DFA data looks at it from a household perspective. So we're actually looking at the total loan exposure of a household, which is why we keep seeing much higher risks in the system than the individual loans are. Now, the interesting question is, to what extent do the individual banks, when they do their underwriting of new loans or new deals, do they actually go into the detail to understand the total exposure footprint of that household, right? Now, in Australia, we've just started with positive credit reporting. So little by little, the banks are actually getting more of an understanding. But I suspect that as here over there in New Zealand, most of the deals that are being done at the moment are actually being written myopically. So in fact, intrinsically, there is fraud pretty much on every deal that's being done at the moment, which is why I agree with you. I think there's a big question to be asked.
Yeah, and you know we touched on it. I'm not sure if we ever posted it, but you know, looking around the fringes of Auckland, where I did my drive around not very long ago, and you can see that the building that's going on in places like Pukekohe, where they've got the Kiwi Build sites, and these people who are buying these houses with the best will in the world, they're recent arrivals to the country. They've probably never had access to credit like they're being given access to credit now. Mm. And I really don't. I don't think they really understand the mechanism of what they've been doing. You know, because on the new builds in particular, and this is a real thing, on the new builds, people can borrow 95%, and that falls outside the lending parameters on limiting the LVR base that the Reserve Bank have set. So, you know, the natural marketplace, even with the lower speed limits on the number of loans that as a percentage that the banks are allowed to write at high loan to value ratios, the banks aren't actually able to meet those targets, but they seem to be able to do it on the newer builds. There's going to be a lot of people who, you know, on these peripheral sites who are going to find themselves very, very quickly in negative equity and trapped. So we have to look at the banking sector, and just, you know, from my perspective in New Zealand, there needs to be somebody there who's going to call it out and say, right, okay, we need to sit this down. We need to set a proper committee, people who understand real estate, who understand accounting, who understand banking, put them together. Hopefully they're people that don't necessarily need to go back into those sectors for a career afterwards, because they won't get a career there again. But there need to be people who've got this fabric that says, okay, this is wrong. We're gonna have some pain recognizing it, because we are going to see an awful lot of people in Auckland at the moment who think that the houses are worth over 2 million, and they've got a 50% lower chance this year of selling for those sorts of numbers. But if we don't recognize it now, we're going to build up this problem. We're going to have more construction firms committing to high land prices, which aren't going to be finalized from the end user purchaser who can actually get in there. Lots of challenges in the New Zealand market. Everybody's sucked from the credit cut. We've got a duopoly on housing construction materials, really two firms that pretty much control and dominate the market. But there won't be any challenges, and there won't be new entrants to the market to be able to compete with these firms while this credit is not being properly looked at. And because we have such a concentration of debt, you know, there's lots of households in New Zealand that don't have a mortgage. 30% have paid off their mortgages. 30% pretty much have a mortgage, and some of those carry mortgages on other properties. You've got a huge number of people that are renting property. I read stats from the UK, and this is a bit of a worry for the mother country. But one in seven one in seven of the pounds spent in rental accommodation in the UK is being spent by people over the age of 50. Mm-hmm. So are those people who just can't get back into the market later on? There are these social things that need to be considered for later on. The data though now is pointing some challenges.
And it's worth saying, I think there's two points to build out from that. The first is, if you think about what's going on over here with regard to poor quality construction, right?
Yeah.
The other interesting comment, and it's coming out now in spades, is that because of the weakening building standards and the weakening certification processes, and the fact that most construction materials are now being originated from overseas rather than local build, we've got very poor quality construction in high rise and low rise. You know, we had Mascot Tower, we had Opal Tower previously, but we're now getting lots and lots of evidence from other sources as well of very poor quality construction. So in fact, the new stuff that's being thrown up is actually not of very high quality. So, and that may well be the same over in New Zealand. Yeah. But the other point is, don't hold your breath for changes from a Royal Commission, right? Because the experience in Australia has been, we ran a Royal Commission for a year. It exposed a whole bunch of horrible stuff, particularly relating to bad outcomes for consumers. There was a report written that was, you know, marginally interesting at the end. And now basically the banks are just back to their old ways. They're pushing back on things like, you know, brokers should have accountability to their customers for the recommendations that they make, and a whole bunch of other things. So in other words, a Royal Commission itself potentially can be captured. So effectively you go through the process, you find some interesting things along the way, but it doesn't necessarily translate to real long-term sustainable change. And it's because all of the power base, both politically, economically, and socially, are all aligned to the housing finance property sector, and they all want the same outcomes, which is higher GDP growth, more construction, higher property prices, bigger debts. And frankly, unless the terms of reference for a Royal Commission are framed correctly, you will not actually get any good benefit from going through the process.
Yeah, it has to be undertaken by people who are outside the political sphere and outside the banking sector. And then they have to be given a platform to be very, very open about it. I mean, I looked at a lot of the Royal Commission stuff in Australia, and you know, they posted things on YouTube. Some of them were absolutely horrendous, some of the revelations that came out of that. Yeah. But they were only ever watched by 100 people, probably you and me, people actually interested in finding out what was going on. There were some I watched twice, so I might doubled up on some of those. But yeah, we need it to be independent. Thankfully, in New Zealand, they're taking all our guns off us, so whatever comes out of the Royal Commission, people won't go shooting bankers, they won't be able to do so. But the, you know, it does need to have a light shone on it. I don't know whether we've got the political will to do it, but the public now needs to start asking for it. And there are people, I think, in the press who are starting to wake up to these factors. They rely, many of them rely on the sponsorship of their, you know, their papers from the media or from the banking sector, from the real estate sector. But there are good people in this country, and I think that we need more of them to go and speak out and start questioning.
Absolutely, yeah. Time to raise the stakes and you know, do a little bit of lobbying and a little bit of insistence that the current mode of operation is not necessarily the right one.
I think we've got a challenge ahead to sort out first.
Yeah.
We'll see how we go.
Okay, Joe, I appreciate your time today, and we'll catch up again very soon.
Look forward to seeing you again.
Cheers.